Washington, D.C. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey folks, it's Ryan Keough from Warbird Information Exchange. Join us every Wednesday evening here on Warbird Radio for Wix Warbird Weekly Live, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, with rebroadcasts throughout the week. You've been on the Wix Internet Forum, one of the world's best for Internet Warbird discussion. Now we're coming to you live and on the air. Tune in, take off to discuss the hot topics in Warbirds around the world this week, along with our guests who are working hard to keep them flying well into the future. Call in, write in, or even Skype in to add your voice to the conversation. Wix wants to hear from you. Again, that's Wix Warbird Weekly Live, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only here on Warbird Radio.
Hi, this is Matt Jolly from Warbird Radio Live. You know, this April, the surviving Doolittle Tokyo Raiders will be gathering in Dayton, Ohio for their 70th reunion. They'll be joined by survivors from the USS Hornet and citizens from China who helped them escape. Visit warbirdradio.com/raiders and help bring as many B-25s back to the reunion as possible. That's warbirdradio.com/raiders. warbirdradio.com/raiders and donate some B-25 gas money today.
What a kick to be part of Warbird Radio with Big Band Jump, heard several times each week. I'm Don Kennedy, host of BBJ, inviting you to tune in, take off with Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
Reminding you that radio engines don't leak oil. They just marked their territory. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Hey, folks. Good evening and welcome to the Wix Warbird Weekly Live Radio Show here on warbirdradio.com. It is February 22nd, 2012, and you're joining us here for the last Wednesday show here in February. On our leap year, this is the month that has 29 days here every 4 years. I'm your co-host, Ryan Keough, and joining us this evening is our host, Zane Adams from the Fort Worth, Texas area. Zane, how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing well. You know what they say in Texas, it was a beautiful, sunny, warm 79 degree day in the winter of 2012. So it was a beautiful day. apparently, there was some flying going on out there today. I heard that Fifi was up and at them again today. So good for them.
Man,
CAF guys are flying her and getting ready to go south for the rest of the spring here.
That is great news. And of course, last week we had Chris Trowbridge, the public information officer of the Commemorative Air Force B-24 and B-29 wing, talking about their spring schedule with the B-29. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, you can listen to it in the rebroadcast, or you can go to warbirdradio.com and download the podcast and listen to last week's show. But we're live with you this evening, and we would love to have you call in this evening. We will be talking Warbirds. We got a special guest this evening, and we're also on the live chat this evening. So if you want to call us, give us a call in the studio. 478-787-4768 is the phone number to reach us here in the studio for questions. And if you'd like to, you can jump on warbirdradio.com to the live chat area and ask your questions there. We're active over there, and it looks like there's quite a group of people already starting to pile in over there. And of course, join us over on Facebook if you'd like to, at the Warbird Radio page on Facebook, if you want to ask your questions there. But I'll let Zane make the introduction for our special guest for this evening's show.
Yeah, tonight we've got somebody. He is a special guy in the aviation world, just because he's kind of rare. He's from the Cold War Air Museum here in the Dallas area, based out at Lancaster Airport here just south of Dallas. And we've got USMC retired Lieutenant Colonel Pete Cause, one of their Hind pilots. Pete, are you there with us?
I sure am.
Thanks for joining us tonight, Pete.
Great to have you on.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, it's always exciting news. I mean, you guys are doing some unique stuff down there at Lancaster with the Soviet hardware, and I know you've got a little bit of American hardware in the works. But the big thing that you guys have got going for you that nobody else in the country does, and that's what makes you one of the special guys, is you're a certified civilian Hind. Mi-24D Hind pilot, and there's just not that many of you guys around, and you guys have got a couple of those flying. Tell us a little bit about the museum there, Pete, to get us started.
Oh yeah, sure. As you mentioned earlier, we are located in Lancaster, and that's just south of Dallas, and our specialty niche does seem to be the Soviet or Russian aircraft, both fixed wing and rotary wing. We are, I think, the only place in town that's got two flying Mi-24 Hind Ds, and we try and get them out and exercise them usually around once a week or so. As you say, there aren't too many of us who fly them. When I received my rating, there were, I think, four people, and I'm not sure what the number is now, but I'm pretty sure it's not much higher than that. So,
you're a rare individual. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not so sure that that's usually been used to describe me, but not always in a good way, I think.
Well, that's all right. It's a good thing to have on your resume, I think. You've got two Hinds flying. I know you guys you've got hoplites, which is kind of the Huey of the Russian Air Force flying. You've got some L-39s. You've got a big jet, I think, planned, getting ready to go.
Oh yeah, we've got. You're absolutely correct. We've got three hoplites down here. Two of those are airworthy, and we fly those around. We're putting those through a maintenance cycle right now, and those will be back up in a few weeks. And we've got we also carry, you know, your standard R-44, R-22. We have a Schweitzer. We have all sorts of fixed wing from the CJ-6 Nanchang, L-29s, L-39s. We have a MiG-21, and also on display here and owned and operated by the Red Steel Jet Team is a MiG-23, and we're just getting ready to get that baby up and flying. I think we need just a couple more parts, and we should have that flying inside of a month here.
Well,
That actually brings up a good point. You know, with a lot of the Warbird museums that in the United States, obviously, you know, parts supplies are pretty robust, or at least, you know, findable. People who have experience in at least, you know, creating parts and such for American or, you know, British or Allied types. But when it comes to the you know, Russian aircraft, especially the Russian helicopters, how difficult or how I guess challenging is it to get or manufacture parts for these for the helicopter fleet, for the fixed wing fleet, and keeping them airworthy or getting them up to restoration standards?
Yeah, very good question, because there are some challenges, but surprisingly it hasn't been all that difficult, and I think that's basically due to the contacts that we have when we receive these aircraft and we basically purchase them from overseas. Most of our helicopter fleet came from Bulgaria, and we were fortunate enough to make contacts with a very sharp and really fine businessman and parts guy, and he's been able to keep us supplied very well on both the Mi-2s and the Mi-24s thus far. So, and we've needed some pretty significant parts. We had to get a main gearbox for one of them at one point in time, and he just, you know, he gets it, and over it comes, and we put it in, and life is good. He's just a remarkable guy, and just keeps us pretty well outfitted on all of our needs.
That's absolutely great. Now, when it comes to, you know, obviously the operations, are there any other unique airplanes like the Mi-24 or the MiG-23 that are here in the United States that you're able to kind of do some collective buys in terms of getting parts supplies for, or are you guys pretty much the only ones that are out there right now?
Well, thus far I don't know too many others who are in the Mi-2 and the Mi-24 business. I know that there are others who are in the MiG business, and we do know some of those. And we have collaborated on certain things with several of those individuals, but not so much on the helicopter side, because we just don't know of too many other people who are doing what we're doing. So,
Is it something that, I mean, that you may, I mean, because I know that obviously the 24 is still being used by you know, air forces and ground forces around the world, you know, in some of the, you know, our aggressor nations and such. Have you, has the museum ever been approached as to possibly using it kind of as a, you know, a staged aggressor role as a contract, you know, aircraft for usage and training purposes for our armed forces at all?
Well, certainly we, we'd never turn anything down if it came our way. We're always willing to listen to any kind of propositions. So far, we're just getting up to speed with everything, and most of the pilots that we have, there are three of us here who fly the aircraft, and I think we're all relatively up to speed on the handling characteristics now. If there were military options to do some training and the like, I'm sure would certainly be interested. Don't know all the ins and outs of the contracting world just yet, but whatever they may be, I'm sure we could, well, I'm not sure, but I would like to think that we could wade into those waters and be successful. So
that's
we'd be interested, I guess, is the key point.
Yeah, exactly. Now you've got a ton of hours. You got over 3,600 hours. You're a veteran of Desert Storm, so obviously you've got plenty of time behind the stick of plenty of you know, the modern U.S. Helicopter operations out there. What's the big difference? What's it like to fly the Mi-24 compared to the other helicopters that you've flown in service?
Right. Hey, that's a great question, and it's one that I really enjoy answering, as a matter of fact, because there are very significant differences. I mean, outside of the fact that the rotors turn the opposite way, and so when you pull power, you
got to learn
to pull power. You add right pedal on a Hind, and you add left pedal on a Cobra. Besides that, there seems to be a significant design philosophy difference between the U.S. and the Russian or Soviet helicopters. And I think part of that is the Soviet helicopters seem to be far more robust, I guess you'd say. They're bigger, they're heavier. They don't really handle quite as well as the American stuff, but they also seem to protect the pilots a little bit better in terms of you know, bullet bouncing, shall we say, the titanium that they have, the titanium plating that they use around the pilot and co-pilot, around the engine, the gearbox. The front plate on both of the pilot and the co-pilot cockpits are 50 cal resistant, and that's a significant, that is a definitely significant item. So, I mean, you can be shot at and you know, with small arms fire, and they're going to bounce off. Obviously, as the Soviets learned in Afghanistan in the 80s, you can't really defeat a Stinger missile too well with the current technology that, or the then current technology that they had. So the Soviet aircraft is a bit more, I guess I would describe it as lumbering, especially with the Hind, as far as the Hind goes. And it's like most of the other Soviet helicopters, it's very top heavy. There's a lot of weight on the top. So when you get that, you don't want to get really significantly large turns into it with high angles of bank. So that's always a caution, especially if you're very heavy. So the key there is to, you know, fly it more gently than the Americans. But with that being said, they do have a couple of other distinct advantages, it seems. Certainly the wings on the Hind give it a little more lift, which allow it to go a little bit faster. So,
in helicopter terms, it's a fast helicopter in terms. What, 180 knots or something?
Exactly. And we can do that without too much of a problem on a cold day. Now, certainly we don't do that if we would have a bunch of rockets and guns loaded on. We wouldn't be able to do that. But certainly it does outrun the your standard loaded-up Cobra from the Marine Corps, at least. I didn't fly the Army stuff, so I can't really speak to that. But it would have outrun the Marine Corps stuff, and just a very fast helicopter, but again, it couldn't turn. The visibility isn't as good in the Hind as it is in a Cobra by any stretch of the imagination. And so that would be one of the limitations that I would think is pretty significant. The one of the benefits on the Hind is their design philosophy pretty much gives the pilot a whole lot of latitude. He can pull a collective up to the armpit if he wants.
Wow.
He's not going to over-torque. He's not going to over-temp. He doesn't have to worry about the N1 going out of limits. He can pretty much pull anything he wants, and there are going to be safeguards built within the system that dump fuel or reroute fuel around the fuel control so that they don't have to worry. So it takes one of the one or more of the items that you have to watch for while you're in combat away and makes it a little bit of an easier job. But with that being said, it also doesn't allow you the opportunity to yank that little extra if you really need it. So therein lies the major difference as I see the engineering.
Well, and you talk about it being top heavy, and I've seen, you know, uncowled one of the Hinds, and I mean the gearbox, the main gearbox up in there is a, you know, it's the size of what, a 55 gallon drum or larger, and it's all cast iron, and I mean it's just monstrous, and everything about this helicopter is monstrous. I mean the latches on the doors are you know something you'd find on a you know 1940s freight car, looks like to me. You know, this kind of stuff. I mean it is
not
hard
too far from accurate. It's very heavy. The max gross on it is 26,000 pounds, so pretty heavy attack helicopter.
Well, most people don't understand. I mean, they see a Cobra.
Far more so than most of the American stuff that I've flown, at least.
Well, you see a Cobra or you see an Apache, and there's room for two guys on board. And people don't really realize that. I've talked to a lot of people that, you know, there's two pilots, you know, there's two guys in a cockpit. But you've got a space underneath that's almost the size of a Huey. For cargo or crew or combat troops and, you know, and that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, the cabin, as they call it, has room for 8 combat-loaded troops, and they can also be used for any kind of cargo. It can also be used for medevac litters. They can put 4 of them back there. Can also be used as their internal ferry tanks that they can put in there at 225 gallons a pop. They can put 2 of them back there, and they take up the entire cabin area if you have 2 of them in there. If you have 1, it just makes it very cramped and uncomfortable. So and it's not very high either, so the headroom, it's not meant for comfort.
Yeah, well, it's a place to crawl in and sit down. I've sat in there before, and it's short. You can't stand up in it, but you know, I mean, this helicopter's what 60 feet long or so, and you know, it's got a 56 foot rotor span. Is that about right? Yeah,
right. That's just about right. The its total length of the helicopter is right around 70 feet.
Okay,
so it's a big bird, and right around 57 on the rotor diameter.
Yeah, monsters.
Wow.
Pretty big.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, because we're about 18 minutes after the hour, but for those of you that have tuned in or just joining us, we're speaking with U.S. Marine Corps retired Lieutenant Colonel Pete Kaz, pilot with the Cold War Air Museum in Lancaster, Texas, speaking about flying the Mi-24 Hind D helicopter, and the other aircraft at the Cold War Air Museum, and also the mission of the Cold War Air Museum. So please, if you want to give us a call at 478-787-4768 if you'd like to ask Pete a question this evening, or if you'd like to talk about anything related to the Cold War Air Museum. We'd love to have your call this evening. But going on, I one of the things that I noticed, Pete, that actually was a big stir in the aviation community over the last couple of weeks is the fact that you guys were part of the Heritage of Helicopter display at Healy Expo at HAI. Major event there in Dallas. I believe it was last week. How was the show for you guys? It was the first ever, you know, Heritage helicopter display, and you were there.
Can you hear me all right?
Can hear you fine. Yep, you're there. And we're wondering how that event went for you guys in terms of getting the word out and the kind of reception you guys got. Oh,
hello,
Pete. You there?
Well,
sounds like
technical difficulty there. We'll try him back here. So.
Well, we'll give him a call back in a second. Again, folks, if you'd like to give us a call, 478-787-4768 is the phone number to call, and we'll be reconnecting here shortly with Lieutenant Colonel Pete Kaas, U.S. Marine Corps retired. He's one of the Cold War Air Museum pilots that's flying the Mi-24 Hind helicopter. Probably, you know, Zane, one of the most unique displays out there these days. I mean, we all think about warbirds being, you know, the AT-6s and the P-51s and that kind of thing, but this is a really, really unique museum off of that. So it's a great opportunity for us to be able to talk to Pete. We're going to giving him a call back here, see if we can reconnect with him.
Yeah, it is unique, and it's kind of blossomed out of nowhere in the last few years. You know, I mean, I've been around since 2008 basically, and the new stuff that's it brings to the show circuit, to the air shows, and to the museum group is quite amazing. You know, they've got some ambitious plans with their MiGs, and the helicopters are creating buzz on the air show circuit, and they do have some air show plans this year. We hope to get Pete back here in a minute and see if we can't touch on those, but they do have some plans. I don't think they first show I think they're supposed to be at Dice Air Force Base here in a couple of months. So, it's a growing organization and a lot of good people over there. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, for the fact too, I mean, we haven't quite gotten a chance to talk with him about their MiG-23 project and program. And of course, that's going to be taking part as part of the Red Steel Jet Team. The Flogger is going to be flying air shows for that group in 2012, hopefully. So hopefully that'll be a pretty amazing sight in the skies, because, you know, with the exception of maybe the F-4 Phantom and with the Heritage Flight Program in the U.S. Air Force inventory, there's not a heck of a lot of really heavy, you know, turn and burning Heritage jets that are out there at this point. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. The MiG-21 is I think further down the line than the MiG-23, and you know, like I said, that is kind of a brother-in-law organization there, I believe, with the Red Steel Jet Team, but. You know, they are based. If you want to come down to Dallas and see these guys, they are there at the Lancaster Airport, and it's just a neat deal. So,
absolutely. So, well, yeah. we'll continue to try to get Pete back on the line, and we'll certainly have him back in our second half if we don't get him here on the first half of the show. But
yeah. Oh well, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes.
Exactly.
Sometimes there's live stuff, you know. So I don't know how far we want to go until we can see if he gets back. But, the hoplites are an interesting helicopter. And for those that don't know what the hoplite is out there, they are a small helicopter compared to the Hind, I guess. They're probably relatively the same size. But the Mi-2s are smaller than the Hind, but they're the workhorse helicopter of the Soviet Air Force and a lot of air forces in the Eastern Bloc. But and they're pretty rare to see. I had first time I saw one, I had no idea what that is. You know, I said,
that's true.
That's a Russian helicopter. That's all I know.
That's true. You know? It looks like,
but they.
Well, let's talk back with the expert. We've got Lieutenant Colonel Pete Kaas, U.S. Marine Corps retired, back on the line here from the Cold War Air Museum. Pete, are you back with us here?
I sure am.
All right. Sorry about that.
I'm not sure about the engineering, whether it was Soviet or American, but the phone system needs to be updated, I think.
There you go.
We have these little time evaps every once in a while over in the Dallas area. I blame it all on Zane. So
I see.
Well, before you you jumped back on with us here, we were actually talking a little bit about the Hoplite, and actually saying that it's kind of the workhorse and comparable to the, I guess you could say, the Huey in the U.S. Helicopter inventory. And for those listeners that are out there that don't know a heck of a lot about the Hoplite, if you could educate us a little bit about their role in the museum and kind of what they're famous for, that would be great.
Sure, I'll do my best. Not the world's foremost Hoplite expert, but it is a much smaller aircraft, and it was basically used for a lot of training. And in fact, that's what we use it here for. If anybody's going to be training up for the MI-24, we would put them through the MI-2 training first, because it gives everybody the basic perspective of blades going the opposite direction, and it's relatively similar in the concept, but quite a bit different when you actually get into the two aircraft and fly them separately. It's the gear is not retractable. It's fixed in the Hoplite, and of course the gear is retractable in the MI-24. But other than that, the flying characteristics are relatively similar. They're both not the most agile helicopters in the world, and so they kind of mimic each other in those kind of terms. But it's a great trainer. It's a far fewer systems to have to learn and memorize, and it's also a very nice auto rotation aircraft. So the autos on this are far easier than on the MI-24. I'll say that.
Yeah, is that due in part to the fact that it's a much lighter helicopter and it just doesn't have as much weight coming down, or I mean, are the blade designs a little bit different in terms of the auto coming down as well?
Yeah, I think it's a much smaller and a much lighter helicopter, and that always makes for a much easier auto in my mind.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Probably not as much when you're in combat. Probably not as well armored, it sounds like, as the MI-24.
No, definitely not. It's more your tin can variety. There's no real armor on it.
So. Speaking of, we'll go back to the Hinds, since that's what you've been concentrating on and getting up to speed on. And but tell us a little bit. Walk us through a little bit about flying the Hind. Actually, you know, what it's like. What is it behind the stick? You know, that you're doing, and tell us. You know, what are your air speeds? And you know, people say that the Hind can't hover, and you know, which I've seen it hover, so I know it can. But you know, tell us a little bit about actually flying it.
Sure. I like to hear that, because you know, everybody says, well, it can't really hover, can it? And I think it's just like anything else. If you load it down to the max and you put it at a high enough altitude, nope, it's not going to hover. But if you you know, load out in a smart mission plan, and you've got you know, if there might be times when you have to download fuel. Did that with Cobras. I'm sure the Army did that with their Apaches, and I think just about anybody would do it with any aircraft that they were loading up with weapons if they needed to. So we don't find we have too much problem. We were over recently as last November, we flew out to Las Vegas for the Nellis Air Force Base Air Show. And in order to get there, we went through Albuquerque, which is, you know, a little under 6,000 feet. And it was probably 10 to 15 degrees C that day, and we were maxed out at right at just under 26,000 pounds. And, you know, we flew off, we hovered and flew off and didn't have any problems. So it's relatively a good workhorse, and I think it gets a bad rap when they say, no, it can't hover, because I'm pretty sure it can. I've done it. So,
well, I know you caught everybody's attention coming into Healy Expo. You hovered it right into the parking lot there. So,
yeah, that was a narrow area, I'll say, a little bit smaller than most zones I would go into, but it was a lot of fun, and Healy Expo was a great time. But as far as some of the flying characteristics, though, the airspeeds, we cruise right around 140. I mean, we've been up to cruising at 160, but typically the best burn is around 140 to 145, I think, and even that is somewhere around 200 gallons an hour. So it's not an inexpensive helicopter, I'm thinking, because I don't know too many people who are going to be buying 200 gallons an hour to fly around. But that's pretty much what it takes, and of course the it goes up a little bit when you're in a hover mode, so it's obviously, as with any other helicopter, it's going to do that. But turns, I've also heard some of the things that you hear about turning on it are that, oh, it can't turn to the right very well, and in fact, there's less visibility to the right, so perhaps that's one of the reasons that, you know, maybe some people would say that, but there's no real difference that I see turning one way or the other. So it's, it's, again, not incredibly maneuverable, but it's solid and it's consistent in mm-hmm. the turn.
It's comparable, like in many ways to like taking a comparison between a Corvette and a Charger. You know, one goes forward really, really great, really powerful, really big, and one's more for the turning and the quick turning, that kind of thing. But
exactly.
I think I'd
go along with that pretty well. I think that's a very good description.
Yeah, so I mean, and it certainly has a very, very imposing presence. And you did mention, that you guys were at Healy Expo. This was the first time that the actual expo had a Heritage of Helicopters exhibit there, and of course you were on display with the UH-1 Huey, and I believe there was a Bell 47 there as well. How was the reception at the at that event, and what were the kind of comments, and what were the kind of things that folks were saying about the helicopter or asking about it as you had the airplane on display there?
Wow, that's another great question. It was a remarkably rewarding event for us. I mean, there were tons and tons of people, questions all the time. I mean, there was almost no time to take a break at any point in time during the entire evolution there. We were very fortunate at the beginning. Mr. Sikorsky, Sergei Sikorsky, Igor Sikorsky's son, came by with his wife and took a look at the helicopter. We had all sorts of other notable individuals coming by. There were some former Russian pilots who used to fly this who came by, and with their interpreters, they were telling us, oh, yes, I've done this with the aircraft and that. And the most interesting comment that one of the Russian pilots made was that he had taken it up to 6,500 meters, so closing in on 20,000 feet, I think. So, which is
wow.
A little above what the U.S. Army, whose manual we kind of use as our NATOPS for the aircraft, a little bit above the service ceiling that they put on it. So. Apparently, it's got a much higher service ceiling than a lot of people know about.
Somebody who was gutsy enough to try it actually tried it without, and probably didn't have to pay the bills for the fuel to do it. But
that's
amazing to hear that kind of hear that kind of performance off of, especially with a helicopter. My goodness, that is insane. Well, that's certainly a unique experience to be able to talk with some of the veterans that actually flew in the aircraft. That's something that I guess we don't have a really great opportunity to do with a lot of the foreign types here in the United States, and really what a great opportunity to be able to learn from them. Did you pick up any tricks or tips or pointers from any of them about certain things and certain maneuvers to do in the helicopter when you were flying?
We didn't really pick up a whole lot of tips. We were really hoping to get one of the former Hind pilots to come down and fly with us and show us some things that he was talking about. But unfortunately, that didn't exactly work out. The translation is a little tough on our parts. But who knows? There's always a next year, and maybe we'll get an opportunity next year to check it out. But we certainly hope we will. But what they were talking about were some of those maneuvers seemed they would have raised my eyes a little bit. On that
route, so. I imagine,
maybe it's
I
better.
Yeah, there you go.
That is true.
Hey, Pete, well, we've got a question here on our warbirdradio.com chat page here. We've got a Blackhawk driver that's tuning in tonight and listening and wanting to know if you were ever at Fort Polk in your tour service there. I know you're a Marine guy, not an Army guy, but, you know.
Yeah, no, and I think he's probably asking if these aircraft were part of the Army aircraft, because the Army did used to, I think both the Army and there was a civilian contracting setup that used to run several of the Mi-24s, and they used to use those as aggressors for, I think, both Army and Marine Corps type evolutions, operations, et cetera. But this was never at Fort Polk or over in El Paso. We received these directly from Bulgaria, and they were built in 1981. Both of our aircraft were built in 1981. Both came from Bulgaria. And I'm not sure if you know the complete history. We had initially imported three of them, and the third one, which we had imported, was supposedly the best of the lot, ready to fly, just put it together and you can go take it out. And that was being shipped from Houston to Dallas, and it was supposed to go on a low boy. It didn't go on a low boy. It, you know, was a little higher truck, and this guy knew a better route to take, and so it met up with a bridge and destroyed the aircraft. And our best aircraft was destroyed right off the bat, and we didn't get an opportunity to fly that one at all. So we took a few extra years getting the other two put back together correctly, and now they're both airworthy, and we fly them, you know, one of them usually just about every week.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, in terms of reliability wise, I mean, are they pretty much, you know, are pretty straightforward to maintain, or are they kind of the F-14s of the helicopter world? Are they, if I can make that analogy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I can say they're not an F-14 variety aircraft. It's very reliable. It's very solid. We have in the first bird that we put together, even from the start, we had virtually no leaks in any oil, whether it be either of the engines or the main gearbox or hydraulics, fuel. I mean, it was just a solidly built aircraft, and you go to all the engine deck, the transmission deck, there's just no oil, nothing to speak of at all. So it's just a very, very nice aircraft to be flying around, because you just don't have to worry about leaks anywhere.
Yeah, I know you pointed that out to some folks there at the Healy Expo, that here it is on the shiny floor, and there's no drips, no drops, you know. And exactly. I bet Rick Harris over there with the Collings Foundation, Huey, was envious of that, but, you know.
I was just going to say, but it makes you wonder, what do the volunteers do if there's no oil to rub around?
Oh, I think there's plenty to do.
Yeah, I was going to say.
there's always something to do. Always, you know, there are so many projects that we have. And certainly, you know, from avionics on up and down, the avionics is probably the most challenging because we still have the original radios and avionics in all of the helicopters. But we've basically gone around that and just put in the American stuff. We're hoping that we're going to be able to figure out some way to actually go back to the original radio setup, but they don't have all of the frequencies that we really need, so we need a modification there, and we're looking into seeing if there's any way to modify the radio so that we'd be able to actually use the original Russian stuff. Mm. So we'll see what happens.
That'll take some creativity off of that. Well, what we're going to do, Pete, is we're going to take a quick break here. And while we're on the break, we're going to actually disconnect with you on this line and then reconnect with you on the other line. So wait for our call there, and we'll reconnect with you. But in the meanwhile, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you with the Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on warbirdradio.com for February 22nd.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Hey, Hey, folks, it's Ryan Keough from Warbird Information Exchange. Join us every Wednesday evening here on Warbird Radio for WIX Warbird Weekly Live, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, with rebroadcasts throughout the week. You've been on the WIX Internet Forum, one of the world's best for Internet Warbird discussion. Now we're coming to you live and on the air. Tune in, take off to discuss the hot topics in Warbirds around the world this week, along with our guests who are working hard to keep them flying well into the future. Call in, write in, or even Skype in to add your voice to the conversation. WIX wants to hear from you. Again, that's WIX Warbird Weekly Live, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only here on Warbird Radio.
Hi, this is Matt Jolly from Warbird Radio Live. You know, this April, the surviving Doolittle Tokyo Raiders will be gathering in Dayton, Ohio for their 70th reunion. They'll be joined by survivors from the USS Hornet and citizens from China who helped them escape. Visit warbirdradio.com/raiders and help bring as many B-25s back to the reunion as possible. That's warbirdradio.com/raiders. warbirdradio.com/raiders and donate some B-25 gas money today.
What a kick to be part of Warbird Radio with Big Band Jump, heard several times each week. I'm Don Kennedy, host of BBJ, inviting you to tune in, take off with Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
Reminding you that radio engines don't leak oil. They just mark their territory. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Hey, so welcome back to WIX Weekly Live here on WarbirdRadio.com. This is the February 22nd show, and we are speaking tonight with Lieutenant Colonel Pete Cause from the Cold War Air Museum in Lancaster, Texas, and we've been speaking about some of the more interesting Russian helicopters that are taking to the skies regularly around the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex here, including the Mi-24 Hind D helicopter and the Hoplite, and we're chatting about the Cold War Air Museum and their goals for the coming year and the future. If you'd like to give us a call and ask Pete a question this evening, we welcome you to do so. The listener lines are open right now. 478-787-4768 is the number to call. Again, 478-787-4768. Pete, do we have you back here on the line?
Sure do.
All right. Well, welcome back again. And we've gotten some questions here on our chat line here on the other side that were wondering, if anybody's interested in seeing the Mi-24 or any of the other aircraft from the Cold War Air Museum, what air show plans do you guys currently have for the spring where they might be able to see some of these aircraft at?
Well, there are several air shows in the area here that we're hoping to get to in April. And I'm going to have to, I don't have them all memorized, unfortunately, but I know that we're going to try and get down to Kingsville, mm-hmm. and that one is, I think around 13, 14, April. I think that's our first one. Unless there's there's one that's out of the area. El Centro, California is asking us if we'll come out there. And, I've sent them the, fuel request. So, we'll see what they have to say about that.
After their jaws are you know,
right.
But that would be a great operation if you get out of El Centro, because that means that I could get out there, because I'm in Phoenix, so it's a it's only about a 4-hour drive to get out to El Centro for me, so I'm chomping at the bit to see the helicopter out there. So that would be great if that's in the plans for the future. So, but it certainly sounds like you guys are aggressively trying to get more and more shows out there, and you said that you guys fly the helicopter pretty regularly out of the base there in Lancaster. Is it a normal weekend kind of flying program that people can come out and see, or is it kind of just a more of a training, getting everybody qualified and getting everything all working appropriately and fine for the helicopters?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Sometimes we'll be doing some test flights, changing this or that on some of the aircraft, and we try and put that on our blog. And in fact, the the website should have and will be updated very soon, as soon as we start getting the actual written commitments from the air shows and the like. We'll be putting that on our website so everyone will be able to follow along and check and see where we're actually going to be flying. And there will be numerous Texas appearances, I can tell you that, in April and May, and also at the end of October, beginning of November, I think we're supposed to be down in Austin at Georgetown Airport. So for, I think they have a fly-in there, and we always go to that each year. So, but other than that, just follow the website. It will be updated once we get the contracts, and you'll be able to come out and see us there. And if you want to come out on the weekends, you can also check the website. And usually we try and put out what we're going to be flying during the weekend, and that could be fixed wing, it could be rotary wing, or it could be both. So there's usually a little something for everybody on the weekends.
Yeah, that's if people want to volunteer, Pete, what do they need to do? Just come up and hold their hand up and say, put me to work? And or how's your volunteer force?
It's just that complicated. Yep, you come out and say, hey, I want to volunteer, and, okay, can you sweep? Can you turn a wrench? Can, you know, it's not very tough to volunteer at this place. We always appreciate extra help, and if you're technically proficient, we appreciate it even more. So come on out, check us out, see if you like it, and just come on and start talking to any of the members here, and that should be all you need to do.
Well, that certainly sounds like you guys have a very, very easy way for people to get some unique time working on some very unique aircraft and such. In terms of, the expansion plans for the museum and where you guys see yourselves growing into, what is coming down the pipeline? What are the things that that you guys are planning on working on to kind of grow the operation over the next couple of years?
Yes, well, we're always looking for new aircraft that we don't already have, and we tend to favor the Soviet stuff at the moment, but doesn't mean that we won't look for either U.S. or Allied aircraft. We've started looking at a few different Allied aircraft just recently, and would always like to, garner anything from, an Alpha Jet or an Su-25 or, Mi-17 or an Mi-8. Any of those are always very interesting, obviously. And if something comes up and it's available and it's reasonably priced, I think the key element there is reasonably priced, then we're obviously going to be interested in it. We're more than happy to do whatever work we need to do and acquire any parts we need to acquire to get it flying.
I know a lot of people out there are probably thinking in the back of their mind, what about the TU-95?
I think we'd have to build a new hangar for that one.
That's true, yeah, we are.
Which, might happen. You just never know. We have a pretty aggressive setup here, and if there were other aircraft, larger aircraft that were coming in, there's no telling what the hierarchy here would do for that. So certainly a potential.
Right. That's true. Now, one of the things that obviously you guys have, which, is now the display aircraft, I believe, is the MiG-23 that's now part of the Red Steel Jet team. And that's still under that relationship. You guys are still going to be displaying the aircraft when it's not flying on the air show circuit. But the team is going to be pretty much, operating that. How did that all come about, if you can kind of enlighten us out there, because that's one of the great things we love to see on the air show circuit is good partnerships happening.
Sure. Well, we were just very fortunate. Red Steel Jet team is a pretty new team here, and the individuals who are involved with that, some have been part of the museum for a while, and some have just come into the museum recently, and so it's a great marriage. There's a lot of incredible expertise and experience, and they've just been able to bring in some L-39s also, and so we're looking forward to this next year of air shows and what they're going to provide, and what they're going to be bringing as far as both the L-39 and the MiG-23 comprise. So it's going to be an interesting time, I think, and an exciting time, I suppose I should say.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it, and you know, certainly the potential of being able to partner up and you know, bring some of the rotary wing aircraft along with the fixed wing, you know, aircraft on the team, that would be a great potential, a good partnership to be able to have both of them together. That would be fantastic. So we do have, if anybody is out there listening, I know we got a lot of listeners this evening. It's been great to see so many people out there. But if anybody's got some questions for Pete, please give us a call again, 478-787-4768 to get us here in the studio. Again, 478-787-4768 to give us a call and ask your questions to Pete here about any of the helicopters or the Cold War Air Museum, and you know, what it's like to fly. Now, Pete, you're pretty much the you know, your rotary wing specific. Working on getting into the fixed wing aircraft at all, or have you gotten into that area, or are you pretty much dedicated to just the rotary wing aircraft?
Well, I keep going back and forth a little bit there. I've got my most recent fixed wing. Let's see, I've got 2 flights in the last 30 years in fixed wing, so I think I'm up to speed on that. one of those was yesterday. the president of the Cold War Air Museum took me out in the CJ-6, and that was a very interesting and a fun time. We got to do a little bit of flying in the area. It was interesting. And, you know, I remember doing this stuff way back when I was in flight training with the Marine Corps, and, well, naval flight training, basically, but I was in the Marine Corps. And it started to come back a little bit. I remembered, oh, yeah. So it's something that I might pursue a little bit, but I'm going to still keep my focus on the rotary wing, because that's kind of where I have the most interest, and it seems to be the most enjoyable for me.
Well, Pete, it looks like we've got a caller on the line here for questions this evening. Caller, welcome to Wix Warbird Weekly Live. Who's this?
Hey, good evening.
Good evening. Who do we got on the line this evening?
Hi, this is Anthony.
Anthony, welcome on board. Have you got a question for our guest this evening?
I do. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to the Colonel for taking his time to speak with us tonight. This is very interesting, and I have a couple of questions for him. Number one, could he elaborate a little bit more on specifically what the issues are with the Soviet radios in the Hind? And my second part of the question, what is the major bugaboo with getting this to air shows? Is it the fuel, the logistics? What specifically is the sticking point with getting this out to other air shows? And I'll hang up now. Thanks. Thanks a lot for taking my question.
Thank you very much for calling in, Anthony. Pete, you want to get a chance to comment on those two items?
Yeah, I can certainly talk to the just getting to air shows. The biggest thing is always fuel. There's no logistics. The logistics of getting there is relatively easy. I mean, there's a little paperwork that you have to do, especially if it's a military show. You have to provide the insurance forms and everything, and that's, you know, we're pretty up to speed on that now. We've been doing that a little bit in this past year, so that's relatively easy. And getting from one place to another is just a matter of flying and, you know, a little flight planning, so that's pretty easy. But the fuel, paying for the fuel is a little harder. So that tends to be the toughest thing to do. The first part of the question, you know, because I'm so old now, you might have to refresh my memory on
the radios. What is the?
Oh, the, yeah, actual... sure. The radios. They don't go. So, for example, 118.275. If you're turning up that, the Soviets just don't have the capability of doing that. You can go 118.2, 118.3. but you're not going to go 118.225 or 250 or 275 or whatever, because they just didn't have that. So overcome that and get some new heads in with the full range of frequencies. But right now, well, the original equipment did not have all the frequencies. So, you know, 0.2, 0.3, fine, but 0.225 or 0.25, they just 250, they just didn't have it. So there you have the situation, and that's why we had to put in the American equipment into it. And if there's a workaround, we'll certainly, hopefully, we're going to be able to get a hold of that.
Yeah, I know that a lot of the Warbird groups that are out there, some of the touring groups use, you know, modern radios for in-flight use, and they have a removable plate that basically is cut off of the original unit that they have molded and made it so that you can screw it in when it's on static display and make it look more or less like that. Is that something that might be a possibility or a possible solution to it to be able to make some compatibility between the two?
Well, it would certainly be one fix, but I don't think it's a fix that we would like to take, just because if we were to do any type of contracts in the future, I think it would be more advisable and just a better setup in terms of overall radars, et cetera, if you do any work with military operations or training. I think that they would prefer to have all original equipment. And so that's the way we would prefer to do things, and if at all possible.
Sure, keep it original, yeah.
That's the way we'd like to go with it. So yeah. We'll see if we're able to do that by just modifying, but not sure just yet if we can make everything work, but we're certainly working on it.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Well, Pete, I really appreciate you being on tonight. I know we've had our technical issues, but, you know, that's the way it is with live radio. So, but I really do appreciate you being on, and I really look forward to seeing you out there on at the airfield. I know every once in a while I make it out to Lancaster and able to hang around. I know it's always a good time with the Warbirds on Parade at the CAF guy Charlie and the CAF guys put on, and you guys are certainly a part of that, and you know, I really, really enjoy that weekend, and I look forward to seeing you guys out there. So,
well, I really appreciate you having me on here, and it was a great time. I just offered everybody, come on down, check us out, and we're absolutely free. Come on down anytime, and if you check the blog or the web, you can hopefully see when we're flying, and come on down and watch us fly a little.
Absolutely, and I'll say the website for anybody who's interested in more information is www.coldwaramuseum.org, or also available at the shortened version www.cwam.org, and that'll give you the full list of all the aircraft, the schedule, the events, just about everything there. You guys have a great website up there, so if you want to learn more about the museum and how to help out and see the aircraft, jump on there, and that's a great resource. Pete, it was great having you aboard this evening, and again, thank you very much for that, and keep the rotor side up and the greasy side down as you're flying along.
I'll certainly do my best. Thank you both very much.
Well, make sure you tell Andy Nixon, I really appreciate him letting us use his photograph for the website for the plug tonight. So he's a good kid, and take care of him when you throw him in the back of that machine.
We sure will. He's a good man, and he's part of what we like to push forth here, our education, and he's aerospace engineer bound. So keep up the good work, Andy.
Well, there you go. All right. Thanks, Pete. We appreciate you being on with us.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care. Have a great night. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Lieutenant Colonel Pete Cause from the Cold War Air Museum, U.S. Marine Corps, retired. And that closes out the show for the Wix Warbird Weekly Live. Join us again next week. We'll be back with you. But in the meanwhile, check out the rebroadcast on warbirdradio.com and the podcast download on warbirdradio.com as well. Have a great night, folks. We'll talk to you later.